Welcome to the CNSA Global Health Committee podcast series. Throughout the series, we will be interviewing different nursing leaders to provide listeners with a glimpse into current, local, and international global health initiatives. We hope to provide students with a greater understanding of global health and to inspire students to pursue paths that will enable them to become future leaders in global health. We hope you enjoy.
Today we have Dr. Olive Lahouche joining us. Thank you so much in advance for having this moment to speak with us today. I really appreciate it. It'll be an awesome session. Just to get us started and to get our viewers familiar with who you are, can you give us a little bit of an introduction about yourself?
Okay, well, first off, thank you for coming to see me today. I'm a nurse from the United Kingdom. I started out dually registered, so that means I'm a registered nurse for adults as well as a registered sick children's nurse. And the joy of those two qualifications has been a career that has taken me out across quite a bit of the world to work, to do research. You know, and the work has been nursing practice or teaching or research. So just a smattering of some of the countries. I guess my first trip was out to Saudi Arabia, where it happens I met my husband, and then I went back to the UK when I finished there, and after that I went to Jordan, then to Pakistan, and in between I've done projects in Egypt and Abu Dhabi, and then to Canada, and the first time I worked with Canadians was actually in Pakistan, and they encouraged me to consider coming here, so I did, and here I am now. I've been at this site, McMaster, for quite a long time, first in hospital administration, then I went to Toronto for a short spell, 5 years, and then back to the university. And so I did my PhD here, and that was a goal when I came, so that's been ticked off on the list. Did my PhD in health policy management evaluation at the University of Toronto. So that's basically it. Right now, what I'm doing is teaching nursing. I teach courses in the master's program in global health, and my research is about refugees and immigrants for the most part, and other vulnerable groups, populations in Ontario mainly. So,
thank you. So you mentioned global health quite a bit and the various countries you've visited, and that is so phenomenal in itself. Can you tell us a little bit about the work you've done?
Whoa. yes, I can. For example, in Saudi Arabia and Abu Dhabi mostly, and more recent project in Cairo, we're all focused on setting up systems for the care of children who are quite acutely ill. So in Saudi Arabia, there with the different pilgrimages coming through Umrah and Hajj, big issues there were the infectious diseases like polio, measles, gastroenteritis. And so the challenge was the staff that we had there were mostly, well, not mostly, all of them were very experienced in working with adults. And the care needs and decision making and the information you use when making decisions for young children, particularly under the age of 2, are quite different than with adults. It's not a mini adult, it's an actual different range of values, et cetera, and different detail that you need to pay attention to. And so training staff up to manage that well was a key part of the role. I was very lucky actually at the time. We had a pediatrician come out from the United Kingdom, and that was the first time we had a pediatrician who was going to stay for a long time. I was actually quite invested in helping with that. Otherwise, people were in and out quite quickly, and they didn't have the time to focus on that. In Abu Dhabi, it was checking equipment that was going to be available for children coming into the brand new hospital. I enjoyed that very much. And it was actually at that point that I actually started to learn to value the skills and expertise I had in pediatrics, because it's not a generic thing at all. And then later when I was working in Jordan and Pakistan, I was involved in teaching nursing there, in degree programs there, as well as helping people with standards of practice and policy. And in Pakistan, it was mostly hospital admin, and again about expanding programs. That was with the Aga Khan University Medical Center, and at times also involved with some of the teaching in their BSCN program there. So when I came to Canada, because you kind of get the interest, and it's hard to let go. So when I came to Canada, I actually ended up going for a summer to Egypt, to Cairo, to help open up a children's cancer center there. And again, it was setting and helping them set up the infrastructure for the nursing department, select and hire the staff, set up the relevant in-house educational development program. Most of those people are still working there to this day. That was in 2007, so almost 10 years later, the majority of people are still there, still in those leadership positions and staff positions. So it's quite a wonderful center. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
It's been an idea of what I've been doing. Yeah.
Awesome. So what struck your interest in global health?
Suddenly realizing, actually, as a nurse, that you could impact health on a broader scale. It starts out with working with the individual patient and then the patient and family. And some of those settings that I worked in, there wasn't a very strong, if any, community health service available. Now, in most of those countries, including Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Pakistan, there's quite an extensive range of community services now. And they were already beginning at that time. But then working collaboratively with others to develop policy, you start to realize you're not, and even the education of staff in a unit, you're starting to realize you're not just caring for this one child, you're actually influencing the care for many. And it's not a short leap to progress out onto the global stage. And I think the global health really came about with my first real experience with refugees. And that would have been in Pakistan when a lot of Afghans were coming in because of the situation there. They were coming into the Northwest Frontier province of Pakistan. And we started to get some patients in because we brought patients with significant illness in from all over the country. Reason being, we had a very active medical school and nursing school and a huge welfare program that enabled people to get treatment that might not be available at all in the region where they were living. And so that piqued my interest about refugees. You know, why is this person a refugee from their own country? And you see common needs and you see common impact, particularly mental health, the trauma of those situations. And then getting interested, because when I came to Canada, it's one of the world's top receiving countries. Proportional, we don't take in the biggest number, but relative to the total population of Canada, we actually are a very active host for resettling refugees. And so here in the world of hospital admin, you encounter patients who have different types of health insurance, and you start to get to be aware of some of those challenges. And then, of course, you're talking with patients and their families, and you start to see some of the anxiety around that. And I lived here in the city, and this is a very active receiving city. So that piqued my interest, and I started to do research. My PhD thesis was actually completed in this city, interviewing refugee and refugee claimant families, 55 in total. And I'm still involved in refugee health and refugee research. And that is very much a global matter in terms of causation, whether it's climate change, environmental disasters, or wars. And right now, the wars seem to dominate our notion of refugees, mainly because of the situation in Syria right now, and previously in other conflict zones like Somalia, Sudan, Congo, and those are still heavy sending countries. And so that's been it. And from that, I've developed a course actually for the Master's in Global Health Program, Refugee Health Policies and Practice, because I was intrigued by it, and I also have the experience over there and over here. And as it happens, last year I went to Jordan specifically for an extended stay to get some new insights about the situation, particularly Syrian refugees, because I knew I was developing that course. And so I met with some of the UNHCR colleagues that I know, and I know them actually from doing a summer institute at Oxford in England. And so most of the people at that institute were actually from UNHCR, or the International Office of Migration. They were from the sending zones. I think there were four of us in total out of the 30 plus who were actually from the receiving countries, and two of us from Canada, one from the US and one from the UK. And so we've maintained contact. And so that was the opportunity then to take an extended stay and actually meet with people on the ground and meet others. They introduced me to others who are actually responsible for overseeing health in the refugee camps and in the urban settings, because the majority of refugees in Jordan actually live in the urban settings. And they now have different populations of refugees, because of course it's the Palestinians from 48, 67 and since, and then a lot of Iraqi refugees and now Syrian refugees. So it's a very significant issue in Jordan. Not problem, I don't like to use the word problem, but there are issues and challenges, and they've been very creative, like a shift system in the schools so that children can get to school. Even at that, some children have not been in school for 3-4 years, and the gap is quite significant. And so anyway, once you start getting an interest, the interest starts to expand, at least that's what I think. Yeah. And as a nurse, health professional, it's quite attractive, the notion that you can actually help someone, and it's a significant help for life, not just for this infection. And that's a very attractive piece too. Like connecting people to systems and to services fosters their independence and their ongoing health and wellness. It's very attractive.
For sure, for sure. Do you ever feel limited as a nurse?
No, not at all. And I've been asked that before. People said, do you ever wish you were a physician? I said, not at all. It's a different role and a different set of responsibilities. And frankly, the physicians, for the most part, have pressure to move on to the next client because they're usually addressing a much more acute need, perhaps, than I might be, a more specific need. And so scarce resource, and so you move the physician on to the next client, whereas the nurse has more time to take for the more global sort of view of mental health. Do you have money to buy food type questions? Where are you going to sleep tonight? What about your child? And all of those concerns, and get beyond the immediate, this wound needed sutured, for example, or whatever the issue is. So no, I've never regretted that. I think also though, nursing education is pretty powerful. It takes you quite a ways along that medical path. Although you're not a medical physician and you're not going to be able to execute those levels of skills, etc., and nor should you. We also do quite a bit in terms of social determinants. So there's a social welfare aspect to our role. So we're very good, almost expert generalists, if you will, to a large extent, I think, as nurses. Whereas a social worker is highly specialized. And I really value having a social worker on hand to consult with, or a physician. But in many of the situations I've been in, there hasn't been anyone else to consult with. And I felt, as the expert generalist, I've got a pretty good background to at least be able to help to some extent. And sometimes the help has been getting that person to the physician they need to see, or to get them connected to the social worker that they need to connect with.
Right.
So that's very empowering, because if you stop to do everything for everyone, you're not actually going to progress very far. Yeah. And that's an interesting balance. Yeah.
Fantastic. You have quite an extensive educational background. So your PhD.
Yeah.
Tell us about how you got into it and why you chose that as your PhD.
That's a good question. Because for me as a nurse, most nurses will do a PhD in nursing.
Right.
But I'd always been more interested more broadly in systems. So as a nurse, and I think possibly the experience in Pakistan was the most exciting time for me, because we had senior people in that hospital from all sorts of very specialized fields like finance, facilities management, who were experts in their field, but had not actually worked in a hospital before or in healthcare. And the listening ear that you had as a senior nurse leader in that organization was quite incredible and very liberating. And I think collectively we did great things, absolutely, because I absolutely had great respect for their expertise, because some of these people were very senior in major banking industry organizations, and another in a major hotel industry that was a facilities director. So he absolutely knew the business of how to manage facilities, complex situations, etc. All I had to do was give the information relative to healthcare and listen, because he had the expertise with the other. So at that point, what I was really conscious of, and at that point in my career, I'd already worked quite significantly internationally, been involved in programs that cost significant millions of dollars. And to my chagrin, no one ever asked, was the money well spent? You know, which goals were attained, which ones are still waiting? What would you do differently if you were doing it again? Was it value for money? And I realized at the time, people with expertise in evaluation are hard to find. And so I thought, I'm going to do my next level of study. At that point, I had a master's degree. So I thought, I'm going to do my next level of study, something to do with evaluation. So when I came to Canada, I actually explored the PhD program here at McMaster. The nursing PhD had just started. The policy management one had not yet started. There was already a wait list of 300. I did find that out. And it was, you know, the approval process hadn't yet been completed. But I did an advanced level stats course here. David Striner was he's a very well-known statistician and researcher. He was the professor, and he recommended UFT, particularly Community Health Department in the Faculty of Medicine. So that's where I went because their PhD was Health Policy Management and Evaluation. They had four streams. So they had a health policy stream, an organization behavior stream, an e-health stream, and outcomes measurement and evaluation. So I did the outcomes measurement and evaluation stream. It was tough at times, but I learned so much. And yeah, and I've been doing quite a bit of evaluation since then, project here and there. And I'm very grateful that I actually have the skills and the knowledge from that to know what I can do and know when I need to get help brought in to do. Because otherwise, there's a risk of wasting energy on doing something again that's already been done and it's not going to work, and we know it's not going to work. So evaluation is key to working smart forward. And so that's how I came to be at UFT. I went to meet with faculty there to find out about it. Was just in time to submit an application and was admitted right away, so I absolutely loved that. Do I recommend taking as long a gap between a master's degree and a PhD as I did? No, I do not. It was a 13-year gap. That's, ouch, hard. Well, if I look at doing the advanced level stats, it's an 11-year gap, but it's a challenge getting back into that routine. But it was a wonderful program. It's multidisciplinary, same as the health policy PhD is here at McMaster, but I'd already got 1 or 2 years behind me at UFT by the time the program got launched here, so I was happy to do that. That's pragmatics in terms of how I came to do that. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's so fantastic. I was recognizing that evaluation is so essential.
Well, yes.
In the development process, because a lot of people go into a project and they don't necessarily consider, oh, has it really attained its outcome? Has it really been effective? Was it a worthwhile investment? And looking back at it in retrospect, a lot of nursing is actually reflection as well.
It is. So it down. Is. And it's really critical. I mean, it's one of the pieces that I emphasize with students. And I remind them, okay, so if we don't reflect and you encounter another patient and you do this all over again, what are the consequences for the next patient? And right away then they'll happily tell you what didn't work well with the previous encounter, what they learned from that, what they'll do differently. And then I'm able to say, you've just reflected, a critical reflection on what you did before. And that's what we're looking for. But sometimes as the academic exercise, they need a little nudge. I find students sometimes need a little help to see the value. And it's already there, but it's such a part of thinking for many. They actually don't articulate it very well, and so pulling them back to, so why would you do that? And now they've got the thinking, and so that's quite rewarding, yeah.
Fantastic.
But it's just doing it systematically.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. Different approach.
It is a different approach, for sure, yeah.
So our last question would be, what recommendations do you have for nursing students interested in global health?
To be open to the possibilities, and also to think in two directions. One is, what do you bring to that opportunity you're looking for? Like, what do you have in your toolkit that you're taking forward? And what are you going to benefit from? I learned that fairly late in my career. Went to a career counselor one time, and I was so excited about several positions, and the first question was, so what does that job add to you for your expertise, your experience, more than the adventure of it? Because it should be a bit more thoughtful than that if you're on a career path. If you can, I think about, so where do I want to be in 5 years? Where do I want to be in 10 years? And if it's simply the adventure, then the adventure it is. I'm not saying that that's wrong. But if you're thinking you want to be doing research in the field or you want to be an expert in something, then you can work back from that goal and start to be strategic in terms of where you go and the types of roles that you engage in. I think never underestimate the most powerful thing, or most important thing I think I can probably share is never underestimate the power of yourself. So basics, like being able to be physically well and active, you need that as the first piece. You need to be able to manage yourself well, manage your own stress well. You've got to be pretty resilient and self-directed for much of that global health work. Doesn't really matter which field you go into. You also need to have a tolerance for the unexpected and the fact that your time clock may be quite different than someone else's time clock in some of the areas you work in. That can be enormously frustrating, but then realizing and thinking, reflecting on, so who's in charge here can actually help, and what can I do to, what portion of that delay do I own? Because sometimes you just have to let go of that sense of responsibility if you don't own the time. But what can I do to ameliorate that? What can I do to get to speed it up a little? But the other thing are the basics, like I said, physically, being physically well, being prepared to handle stress and crisis and stuff. But things like have a driver's license and be able to drive standard gear shift is really important. I used to tell people, you know, be able to drive, and so a number of them were able to drive, and they stayed in touch when they did global health work. And then one of them said, you didn't happen to say, you know, make sure you do standard driving, standard gear shift. And so now I add that. Because sometimes if you're in an outback type situation, or isolated situation, people's health or wellness or safety might depend on you being able to drive, to get the supplies, to get water, to do whatever it is, and it sure is helpful. Is that the main part of your job? Absolutely not. But in a crunch, it may be down to you to do it. So paying attention to those basics, learning a few languages, a few words of any language that belongs to wherever you're going is helpful. It shows people you're willing to engage and connect, and they'll forgive a lot of the other. Then you don't have to be an expert in that language, but you know, it's helpful to learn please and thank you and things like that. Yeah, so that would be my tips. And enjoy. The other thing that I'll say to people, if they're out working on a contract, it was a tip given to me the very first time I went overseas, was the first thing you should do is bank the cost of a ticket home. And I remember being shocked and all excited, saying, why would I do that? They said, because it takes the pressure off feeling trapped. You know, because there are days when things don't go well and you think, you just want to come home. You want to be in your own place with your own family. And knowing that you can actually afford to do it takes a lot of that stress away. And I do that. I've done that consistently. It's the very first thing I do is make sure I bank the cost of trip home. And others have said, you know, you never know when an emergency would happen. You actually have to do that. But that never happened to me. I never had that family emergency that required me to leave. But it was liberating knowing I could, that I could exercise that choice, and then I'd sleep on it and I'd be fine the next day. But I think being up for the adventure, be fit, manage your stress, yeah, those would be the major things. And they're pretty basic, you know. And understand the expectations of yourself. The other thing that's important is do not allow people to have unreal expectations of you based on a Western education. Because for many settings, for me, I'm Caucasian, there's a white power thing that comes into play that can actually be quite harmful, where people think you know the answer to everything, or because you've said something, it must be so. And they don't argue back, they don't press back, they don't pressure you to rethink when they should have. And so thinking that through, and how are you going to ensure that the information you have, or the information you've been given, is in fact the best information, not what people think you want to hear because you're in the powerful seat. But also that people are clear. You might have a Western education, but it doesn't mean to say that you can't make a mistake. And you're wanting to be absolutely sure that this is the right thing to do. And I think people generally appreciate that on the ground. Do they honestly believe you can make a mistake? I'm less sure of that. We still tend to have high hopes, but we are very well educated, and we can get great information at our fingertips. The other reality is the internet is all over the world now, readily accessible, and in fact in some settings it's surprisingly more accessible than it is here, you know, via satellite and things. So there's a lot of enabling in place wherever you go now globally. And the other thing is, know about local customs and be smart and be respectful of them. It's not a time to take on a revolutionary stance on how women dress or how women should behave, because in nursing we're almost all women, and hundreds and thousands of women go internationally and do wonderful things and do great careers with no harm and no drastic impacts in terms of their own safety. But it's smart to pay attention and check out those risks and to follow whatever guidelines you have and that you've been given. So that would be, I don't want to get too preachy about it, but that would be probably it that I would have.
Awesome. Thank you for taking the time to share with us some of your awesome experience and your great expertise. Honestly, you are an amazing individual, and I really appreciate it, and I'm sure we all do. And on behalf of CNSA, thank you very much once again.
You're welcome.